I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air, everyone. It's almost Halloween, and this year I'm really trying to get into the spirit. Are you?
Oh, come on. Come on.
What
this
do you
is
mean?
Not Halloween. Halloween is, you know, this is, you're falling victim to what Walmart has decided you should be excited about. Please, this creeping American holiday that is nothing.
Halloween is amazing. It's the only day of the year you can dress up as a slutty pilot.
as a what?
I'm joking.
My God.
No, but...
can we start this episode again, please? Bloody hell. Right, okay, so you like Halloween. What?
Yeah, have you watched the movie Hocus Pocus?
No.
Oh my God, you will love it. It's like classic Disney movie from when we were growing up. Halloween
themed. I love Disney
films,
but
it'll
just,
get you
Halloween
so
is
in the
not,
mood.
I mean, Halloween looks nice in the sense of, I don't know, pumpkins in a pumpkin patch and things like that. But then I think those things are associated more with autumn, or if you're an American, because the leaves fall, then fall, right? But yeah. I don't think that Halloween itself is something that should, I can't believe we're even discussing it. Honestly, I get ready for the episode. We're a minute in and you're justifying this fake consumery holiday.
No, it's for the kids. I mean, growing up as half American, Halloween was my favorite holiday because it's the day you get to dress up, you get to eat unlimited candy. It's the best. Let's move on. What do you want to talk about?
I will agree with you that it's nice for kids, because actually you just reminded me of some sweet memories, like being a kid having Halloween parties. Actually,
yeah, there just, you go.
Yeah, also trick or treating and going to the house where we used to live, because that was the excuse to see what they'd done with, like, the hallway.
Nice.
When they open the door, I'm like 7 years old and saying to my twin sister, oh my God, they moved the mirror in our house.
Whoa. So your family is so British, because you see, my dad, being American, when we go to like houses we used to live in, he will knock on the door and say, we used to live here, can we come in and have a look around?
No way.
A lot of the time they let us in. So I've been in so many houses we used to live in with my dad.
And then what do they do when they go? What does he do when he goes in? What does he say? Oh, we had an armchair here.
Basically, what? Yeah. And it's always because we lived in like six houses in the 9 years we were in the UK. We kept moving. And the Brits are always so nice. They're always like, would you like a cup of tea? Like, it's just, they're very welcoming. So I don't think
also,
you need
to feel
an
American family knocked on my door and were like, hey, we used to live here, I'd be like, bullshit, it's a scam. I'm on the forums talking about, guys, there's a new scam in town. They knock at 4:42 p.m. They pretend they lived in your house, but their eyes are on your iPhone.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, it would just be, but it's have you seen that video of where Jennifer Lopez is walking through the Bronx?
Yes.
And she goes outside the house and she's like, I used to live here. And he's completely uninterested. And he's like, what's your name? She's like, Jennifer. He's like, Jennifer what? She's like, Jennifer Lopez, expecting some kind of reaction. And he looks at her like, what do you want? it's so just, humbling.
It always cracks me up. I mean, we're going on such a tangent, but there's always these videos going viral of people not knowing who Jennifer Lopez is specifically and are getting offended. I feel like the next person who's going to be in an airline ad is 100% Jennifer Lopez. I'm calling it now.
Do you know what? That's quite a good bet to put on the record. But I would bet that it's going to be with someone like Turkish Airlines or some. I feel like that's where J-Lo would. I don't know. I could see them trying to.
Maybe a Middle Eastern airline. I mean,
maybe a Middle Eastern airline. Arguably, Turkish is both. But going back to the bit about the house, right? The only thing I can relate to that is we were friends with the guys that bought our house, and therefore we would go back for dinner, for like dinner parties and things like that, which was really, really weird, because when you're sitting at the dining table that was your dining table for 12 years and that is the house that you grew up in, then, you know, naturally, you know what we're like naturally we're hosts, okay? Love hosting, love having people around, blah blah blah. So then sitting in an environment that you used to be the host in, but actually being the guest and resisting the urge to go back into the kitchen and say, "Did anyone want this?" or to take a dish. But also, they used to refer to the bedrooms on the top floor as still, "Oh, that was in Alex's room." Because they didn't have kids, so they used to say, "Oh, we put that box in Alex's room."
Okay, that's a bit weird.
so they did. Now, I don't know if that is still the case, but in the beginning, definitely, it was the names had stuck to that specific room. So
Oh
it
my God,
is,
that is
but
weird.
otherwise, there was no. But you do have a sense of, don't you agree that it somehow is always feels like it's yours? Like that
Yeah,
is.
100%.
There is an ownership that doesn't leave you. I drive past it. If I was, sometimes I deliberately drive past the house that we were in when we were really young. So not the one I just said, but the one before that. And again, I think, yeah. I mean, that's why have they put that curtain up? It's so ugly. The
Yeah,
blinds
I
were
know.
so much
They shouldn't be allowed to do
better.
that. To tie this back to aviation, I've heard from quite a few former flight attendants that this is how they feel when they fly after you quit. You know, if you fly the airline where you used to work, you also feel like, wait, like I should be in the galley right now. I shouldn't be sitting in the seat being the guest because I'm actually at work. Or even when you're flying on standby when you work there, you know, it's a weird vibe kind of thing.
That's true. It's interesting because I always wonder about when airlines take on crew from one airline with their own standard operating procedures, their SOPs, and then they blend them into another. It's always funny to hear how they say, "Wow, you know, we thought we had the same job," and then like airline A was doing the bare minimum, and airline B is doing 10,000 times more, and yet they think that it's a level playing field, and it's just really not. And some go far and beyond, whether it's you know, to emphasize safety or to personalize the service or whatever. And then there's the other bits where it's like, "Oh, you know, airline A would never have let us interact with the flight deck in that way, but airline B does it." As we, you know, it's not a level playing field. It is still very, very what happens in each house, despite the fact that all share the general
The skies.
consensus. Yeah, they share everything in common in that. Thankfully, we have the safest form of transport. But other than that, everything is very different as you go from house to house, as in airline to airline.
Yeah, 100%. So, speaking of an airline going to someone else's house, in headline news this week, Delta Airlines has, this has been rumored for a while, but it's now confirmed that next year in 2026, in October, Delta will be launching nonstop flights from Atlanta to Riyadh, making them the first US airline to fly to Saudi. And this will be Delta's first flight to the Middle East in a long time, with American already flying to Doha, United flying to Dubai. So this marks their return to the Middle East. But obviously, flying to Saudi and Riyadh specifically is very different from flying to Dubai and Doha. What do you think about this? What do you think about the prospects for this route, the reasons it's starting?
I just think it's so interesting that we're in a place now where the US carriers have, and we've touched on it time and time again, but very firmly now following the whole company strategy of the fact that if you can't beat them, then join them. And they are joining them and setting up shop there and moving in and flat sharing and whatnot with these airlines and these nations that they had such a problem with just a few minutes ago in the grand scheme of things. Okay, it was now about 10 years ago, but the rift, as Tim Clark recently referred to it on an interview he did, was very real. And now they've kind of seen the light in that aviation does work better when you connect and when you make the world a smaller place and stop complaining to the respective administration and the presidency in that time about, you know, unfair, blah blah blah, and actually level up. And I think that's what a lot of them are doing. So it's interesting that so Delta is planning a few long haul services. You just touched on Riyadh. We know that they're going to launch to Singapore as well as Manila, but they haven't given any indication as to when or even where from yet. So the first initial takeaway I had is that this isn't just because they have, for example, conquered Europe. It isn't because Europe is super established in their plans and they have to look beyond. I would also argue it's because they recognize that these are the areas of growth over the next 10 years. It is the Middle East and Asia, and these massive emerging markets that are incredibly fast-paced in terms of their economic progression, but also within society, their links with the rest of the world and so on. Riyadh is a classic example of that, as are many of the GCC, the Gulf cities. So I think it makes sense that they be a little ambitious and have announced this non-stop flight that will begin in a year. So we still have quite a bit of time. And if you can imagine how Saudi Arabia has developed over the last couple of years, you can imagine how just over the next year that will continue to progress. So they'll launch Atlanta Riyadh in October next year with an A350-900, first ever link non-stop between the US and Riyadh operated by a US carrier. But crucially, of course, they're doing this because by then Riyadh Air will be up running and hopefully on its way to maturing as an airline. And so I can see a vision in the Delta boardroom where they would be able to rely on Riyadh as a partner to connect Delta flights further east without Delta having to operate it themselves, and Riyadh Air will take them on, as is a successful model already proven by Doha and Qatar Airways in Qatar and Emirates in Dubai with Emirates' respective partners, which it's had a few, but really now is with United there. So it's a sensible move, I think, in this kind of last piece of the puzzle. You've got Qatar and American, as you said. So with Saudi and Riyadh, with Delta and the SkyTeam rumors, I think it fits.
Yeah, I just wonder. I would love to do a poll of public opinion of Saudi Arabia in the US and Europe. And I would love to see 2015, 2020, 2025, and see if the public perception has actually changed. Because if you go to London, I'm sure you've noticed the ads for Saudi Arabia everywhere. There's tourism
Of
ads on
course.
buses, billboards. But I just see those and I'm like, is your average Brit going like, you know what? I'll trade Dubai for Saudi. I think there's
Not yet.
such
I
a
think
long
that's
way.
not yet. Yeah, there is a long way. But is the average Brit, for example, considering, oh, we should watch this boxing match in Saudi? Yes. Or are they, oh, there's this, special game or this exhibition tennis match or this whatever in Saudi? Or there is this concert in Saudi? Should we? Yes. So I think Saudi Arabia is being very successful in that sense. Maturing as a destination of its own right, it has a long way to go. And I would argue that it knows that. It's not naive in thinking that it's already established, but their numbers don't lie, and it is growing year on year. Obviously, their aim is quite ambitious. They're hoping to get 150 million passengers by 2030. This is all part of making Riyadh a global aviation hub. At that point, I think it starts to get a bit shaky because Riyadh is far from any form of hub, not least an aviation hub. But the plans are there, and this was, for example, the other Gulf cities not too long ago. And so, given how much faster things can happen in this day and age, they know that eventually they will get there. And I think for Delta, that's financially pragmatic. I want to ask you specifically about the incentives and the subsidies that we know Delta is a sucker for, because this was the reason and the rationale behind the Delta Atlanta Brisbane route, right? Where they knew that Brisbane had made it incredibly easy, removing many financial burdens and operating costs in order to secure Delta's business. Well, that's Australia, and Australia does not operate like Saudi Arabia. So you can imagine what Delta will be benefiting from, with Riyadh being very open that it will subsidize everything to get an airline, as in operationally almost everything, to get an airline to set up shop in Riyadh.
Yeah, it's so funny because obviously European airlines, US airlines love to criticize other countries for supporting their national carriers or providing subsidies. We just had a few European airline CEOs come out again trying to put pressure, even though they're partnered with Middle Eastern airlines, they're still trying to put pressure again and saying it's an unfair playing field. Here we have Delta, who for a long time has said the same thing. And if you go on any of my YouTube videos about any Middle Eastern airline where I praise one of these airlines, half of the comments are usually, yeah, it's just because they're subsidized. It's all oil money. It's not fair competition. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, guys, the US carriers are not only among the most subsidized airlines in the world through history, being bailed out time and time again, not least during COVID, where they received so much support from the government and barely did anything for the flying public in return. But if you look at Delta, they are the hungriest airline for cities that will offer them subsidies to launch a route. They'll fly almost anywhere as long as they can do it for free or for cheap at that airport. So it's just really ironic because, of course, that is one of the big motivations for Delta launching this route. They're also paling in comparison to United. Over the past, well, especially since COVID, United has not only become increasingly premium by US standards, let me emphasize that that is by US standards, but they've built what I would say is one of the most interesting route networks of any airline in the world. They fly to some actually a ton of secondary cities in Europe, especially Southern Europe. They've increased their network out of Tokyo, where they now fly to Mongolia and Taiwan and the Philippines from Tokyo Narita. They fly to Greenland, one of the only airlines in the world to fly to Greenland, the only Star Alliance carrier to fly to Greenland. So United has an incredibly attractive network. And what they've realized is that the network is an asset. Even if flights to Greenland are not raking in cash, or flights from Tokyo to Mongolia are raking in cash, the value to the brand of saying that United can get you from, I don't know, Louisville to Mongolia all on our own metal is something that shouldn't be underestimated.
It's a threat to Delta, right? Is an extra headache to Delta.
So this is something that drives credit card signups. It drives loyalty. And as we know, as we've spoken about the past few weeks, US airlines don't really make money flying anyway. They make money from credit cards and their loyalty programs. So operating routes that seem aspirational or interesting and having a network that's inspiring can help the bottom line in other ways. So now Delta is really trying to play catch up. They're so far behind that it's almost laughable at this point. Mm-hmm. But this, of course, them finally flying to the Middle East is a part of this. American and United have already been doing it for a few years. So Delta's the last to return, but it's overdue. And that's the same reason we're seeing these Singapore and Manila flights launched, which are also laughably overdue. But Delta has to step it up to some extent so that their network looks mildly interesting compared to United. That's what this is about. I think it's so fun to watch.
Delta does sometimes fly to the Middle East nonstop, but of course it's on a charter basis because it is kind of collecting the US troops or their families. And so it goes to the respective, the different US bases across the Gulf. So sometimes we do see, don't we? We see a Delta A350 or 330neo around and we're texting each other. If we spot it in the sky, we know. We're quite familiar, aren't we, with what should we wear in most countries. So when we see it, we know that it's out of place. Delta is also pretty upbeat about, I mean, earlier in the year, they were worried and they removed their guidance because they were worried about how the industry challenges, all the geopolitics, the tariffs, everything, how it was all going to have a negative impact on consumer confidence. And Delta were on the record in saying that they saw some of their revenue start to slow down, that they saw corporate revenue slow down. There was, you know, it was tariffs for much of the year. But they have said that things have really picked up. Ed Bastian sat down for an interview a couple of weeks ago and said that there was, quote, a significant improvement in revenue that has led to some more upbeat guidance, expecting that they will, quote, expecting to have their best fourth quarter in history in terms of profit for the last part of this year. I think there was that period, especially in the summer, where Trump was quite volatile in anyone was going to face a tariff, no matter what country or individual or organization or whatever. And it was just, it was chipping away at the rhetoric over consumer confidence. There, it was definitely a weaker summer for the US carriers, but specifically it was a weaker summer for the rest of the world going to the US, and that rhetoric definitely fueled that. But on the whole, and I think this is, I guess, a testament to the times that we live in now, people have short memories. The news cycle moves on so fast. We have these massive things that happen, and then they just, it's as if it didn't happen 24 hours later. And as a result, somehow, as much as that harms different areas of society, it also benefits the likes of airlines that are typically very fragile and vulnerable to all of those external factors. If you've got a bunch of people actually forgetting that there was all this negative rhetoric about the economy and recession fears and all that, naturally they woke up and they feel, you know, they don't feel too bad about their own finances, then they've gone ahead and they've booked and they have traveled, and it has meant that this last part of the year is shaping up to be one of the best, as Delta just revealed, not only for Delta, but I'm also hearing that shared consensus across much of the industry.
Very interesting. If I'm going to be a little cynical, do you think that there's some intentional effort to make us all short-minded and to have short memories so we don't really dwell on all the crazy things that are happening in the world right now and move on super quickly instead of realizing, like, wow, this year there have almost been multiple massive wars around the world, and there have actually been a few conflicts, and we've had multiple deadly plane crashes that somehow no one is talking about anymore. It's like we just move on so quickly. Well, I feel like
there's
before
so
COVID,
many factors
that
it's horrible how much it's horrible how fast everyone moves on. It's just awful. I think this new cycle that we're in now is also awful, because as I said, it's four stories that would otherwise have dominated headlines and public conversation for weeks 15 years ago, and now just four stories of that afternoon. Then it's a new crazy four of the same magnitude the next day. It's exhausting, but at the same time, it's I feel there's so many factors. I could talk about this for a while. Don't you think social media has such a role to play here? And the fact that we're consuming things in 3-second bites, and TikTok, and the swiping, and it's all fueled this short attention span, fast-paced, crazy fast-paced society that means that, the impacts are that people forget things. We're not... I remember in 2016 or 2015, I think 2017 was one of the safest years for aviation on record. I think we got through the whole year without one fatal commercial airline accident. It was either 2017 or 2016, and maybe we announced in 2017. I can double check that. Anyway, but now, as you say, you and I spoke on the phone earlier this week, and we were thinking, how is it the industry hasn't, usually we would hear more from the industry about the very big, awful aviation tragedies that we had this year. I mean, all of this started on before this year even started with the Korea incident, the aircraft that went into the wall.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, that was like on the new year just before. And then, you know, then you had the American Airlines aircraft in the river in the nation's capital. Everyone died. And within a month, and it's, again, hasn't been mentioned. You and I go to conferences, we've been at seminars, we've been at everything. Doesn't get a bit, I don't know, it's weird. And I also blame that cycle, as you said. Air India, such a tragedy, you know, involving a 787 Dreamliner and aircraft in service everywhere. And again, okay, that did go everywhere in terms of headline news. It did last longer than a day. It lasted definitely a few days. But yeah, it makes me feel uneasy. Just the way that everything moves on so fast now, because as I said, we're just in this endless news cycle of four massive stories a day.
Have you seen, just speaking of TikTok, lol, have you seen Japan Airlines maybe on Instagram or something pop up?
No. What are they up to?
Japan Airlines is killing it on social media at the moment. I think they have some new staff member or something that's managing this. It is so cute, so fun, makes me love Japan Airlines.
What's their Instagram that they're doing on? Is it Japan Airlines Global or Japan Airlines underscore JAL? So I've been seeing it on
TikTok. I see Japan Airlines Official is their TikTok.
Okay, I'm seeing these videos now. Yeah. Wow, one was just posted 20 minutes ago. Yeah.
They're just so cute and Japanese and funny. It's great. I highly recommend everyone check it out if you want some airline entertainment.
I like that. I want to quickly stick with the US just to touch on what's happening with Mexico. A couple of listeners wrote in about this as well, that the US has revoked the approval for Mexican carriers. So specifically the approval of 13 routes for Mexican carriers only, including, of course, Aeromexico, Volaris, Viva, Aerobus. They've cancelled all flights from Mexico City's new airport to the US. So any US routes, citing violations of the US-Mexico air transport agreement. Of course, this is quite political, right? The US side are saying that Mexico has allegedly withdrawn slots from US carriers and forced cargo handlers out of the airports, creating an unfair advantage to their home carriers. The Mexican side of things is a little more, they're a bit quieter in the public argument that's playing out. But they say that the slot cuts and cargo moves are just part of airport capacity and infrastructure changes as they shift to the new airport, the Felipe Angeles, which is, they say, part of their next chapter of growth. I wonder if this is legitimate or not, in that are we just seeing a primarily political story play out as part of the wider dispute, the part of the wider issues that the US has with Mexico across the political spectrum? Or is this Mexico kind of being able to cleverly use the move to champion and to prioritize its own home carriers, which, by the way, every country does. It's always funny when anyone singles out another player and says, but you were prioritizing your airlines. Yeah, that's literally the mandate for most countries' aviation agendas. What do you think?
I mean, you're 100% right. And it's funny here because is the U.S. not trying to prioritize their own airlines in this situation as well? So you're just trying to protect, you know, what's interesting to you. There's this whole discussion with Mexico City's new airport because no one really wants to fly there. It's way out of the city. And it's causing issues because, I mean, we keep saying this time and seeing this time and time again. The same will happen now with Mumbai's new airport that's opening. Which airline voluntarily wants to fly to an airport that's like an extra hour outside of the city compared to the existing airport? Of course, no airlines do. So there have to be some sort of systems in place to force airlines to some extent to move to the new airport if you want airlines to start using it. Otherwise, no one's going to do it. So it's a tough balance. I don't know, you know, if I was a government, how I would navigate that. Perhaps moving over, prioritizing.
I like that you said that if you
airlines.
Were a government rather than if you worked in government, but if you yourself
I'm literally the government.
Were the government.
What do you think about this?
Yeah, it's definitely is an issue. I mean, there's got to be not only incentive, as you said, but you've got to also be able to demonstrate that, okay, you know, we're all going, so let's all hold hands now and make the move. Because the moment you get some reluctant to say, actually, the infrastructure is not ready there, it's far, our passengers don't want to fly there, it's away from X, Y, or Z, and you have some that stay put, then you're in quite an issue there. There is going to be a day, as you said, when Dubai Airport, as we know it, closes and everything is going to shift to Al Maktoum. And again, that's an all or nothing scenario rather than a split operation kind of thing. But I could also argue that a split could work there as well because it's so small and everything's so close together in the grand scheme of things. And then there's the examples of who have been able to do it quite successfully. The smooth transition to the new Beijing airport, the Beijing Daxing airport, and I know I've just mispronounced
PKX.
That, but I'll say it as it is in English, but to PKX, is I think, textbook in airlines making a nice, smooth justifiably, you know, common sense move to what has quickly just very naturally become the updated Beijing hub. And I think that's a decent example of that. And then you have to remember, like, what's happening in, sorry, they've just popped into my head, and I don't mean to come for them at all in this, but what is happening with Kuwait, with the new airport there? It's been years and we hear nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing anyone's heard from Kuwait's aviation industry in years is my videos from Kuwait Airways.
God. Otherwise, just in case anyone isn't up to speed, Dan did go viral across the Arab world because he was there is this great video that, and I say great video, you just actually, it's quite a shame. You had a bad flight, didn't you? Because horrible. It was a bad flight because you were made to feel, you were told that you couldn't film, but you were not filming anyone. And the cliche argument that people worry about when someone winds the other person up and says, you know, this guy's really famous, so he's going to make it difficult for you. And you're not like that because you do have, I mean, unlike some others, you are very, very by the book when it comes to ensuring that you respect privacy laws. You don't film anyone without their consent. You don't film the public. So,
and I'm never out to get anyone, but is going on in Kuwait? The difference there, what, you know, the blessing that some airports have in Kuwait, also Abu Dhabi, is imagine being able to build an entirely new terminal and new runways on the same grounds as your old airport. What an amazing thing that you move all your operations by driving 1 kilometer across one runway to the new building. And that this is something, you know, in Abu Dhabi, I've seen that Etihad Dum 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 has started having to use a few bus gates at sometimes a day, which wasn't the case when they opened the new terminal. So I'm starting to think, like, okay, so when are we forcing Air Arabia and the low-cost airlines to move back into the old terminals so that the full service airlines can maintain as premium an experience as possible in the existing terminal, because there is the terminal infrastructure there for low cost airlines to, you know, reduce the burden a little bit. So there it's easy. But
they will not be unburdened by what has been.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%.
That's a quote. There's a quote. Airports, I mean, they just take, it's just a nightmare in terms of construction, and they take forever. And by the time that these airports actually want to launch, just imagine, some of these airlines don't exist anymore. When they do exist, the last thing they want to do is move if there's no clear incentive as to why. Just to recap, remember that Berlin construction formally began in 2006, thinking that it would open in 2011. Instead, it opened 14 years after construction in October 2020 and still had an absolute shit show of breakdowns and issues. And, you know, it was just the most ironic German efficiency story ever, in that they absolutely failed to just open an airport, which some nations like Singapore, for example, are able to do ahead of schedule in some scenarios.
I know.
And the same is true. I mean, although it's not true, I mean, Al Maktoum, which we just spoke about, formerly Dubai World Central, that was supposed to be fully operational by 2017 and wasn't. Yeah. And they had various different periods where they were pausing construction and so on. Terminal 5 at Heathrow, the concept first emerged, the initial planning, in the 1980s.
No,
you and
way.
I had not yet graced the earth. The 1980s. Okay, it opened 20 years later in March 2008 with a big baggage fiasco crisis. If you remember, the whole terminal just broke down because it couldn't handle bags. 20 years. It's just a headache for most nations. And when airports are able to pull it off even slightly as planned, I think they deserve real recognition and applause, because the opposite is true in just almost every other market.
Very true. And that's something that Hamad Airport has actually done remarkably well with their extensions. Yeah. They've opened on time. Things have been smooth.
Well, in Doha, the expansion, the orchard, which is now like the main part of the airport, and the amazing, beautiful tropical garden. That all opened ahead of schedule before the
Well,
World Cup. I mean, show me an airport that opened anything ahead of schedule.
I know, but wasn't that such a wild experience? Because I remember flying through like a month before the World Cup, and I was like, this thing doesn't even have a roof yet. Like, what? How are they going to get this done? And then, as you say, it just worked out and it opened on time. But you do remember that, like, until the very last second, I was like, what is going on here? This is not
But
complete.
a lot of the build up to the World Cup was like that, to be honest, where there are so many things where we were, I don't know, you would just witness anything and say, but how is that? How could that possibly be done in 3 weeks when the whole world came for the World Cup? And you can be sure that
Yeah, I mean, there was
it
no
was remarkable
choice,
in that
so.
sense. Yeah, it was they could see the goal in sight for so long that it was all hands on deck. So yeah, you wanted to bring up something from your home market.
My
This is the
home trauma.
Scandinavian side of you. What did you want to tell me about? All I get is a text message from you saying, Alex, we are Scandinavia. What?
I just want to briefly discuss this new ad from SAS, which you guys 100% have not seen it because it has 7,000 views on YouTube, even though they paid literally an A-list Scandinavian actor to be part of it. Apparently, they're not paying to spread the video. But it features this famous actor. It's 45 minutes long, and basically it's the message of the ad is supposed to be Scandinavians are very discerning and difficult customers, and we know how to serve even the most discerning people. And I'm just like, this ad is so questionable in so many ways. But the part where it gets interesting for the podcast is around 35 seconds in, this famous actor walks past the line with his priority boarding, tries to scan his boarding pass, and it goes beep, beep. It won't let him through. And then a family comes along and they
Oh,
go,
God.
oh, we're only boarding kids and families now. So then you see this dad carrying his kid up the stairs of this A350, and he says, I don't know the exact line, but it's something like, and that's why we always fly SAS. And that makes me think, did they listen to your rant back in the beginning of this season about kids getting priority boarding and say, we are gonna prove that that's actually very important to travelers?
I mean, I think it's questionable and laughable that the airline is somehow suggesting that the fact that they offer families to board first is so revolutionary it is worthy of a TV advertisement. Because this is basic stuff, okay? This is low cost airlines were doing this way back when. It's just funny. I do think SAS is a little lost, do you not?
Oh my gosh, they are not a little, they are extremely lost. And in fact, we need to do an if we ran SAS soon because they like, what are they doing? What is their branding? What is their marketing? It's all just, I mean, I think it's gotten slightly better since Air France KLM took a stake, but we need to go into SAS and help them out. Like, if they would let us, we could save SAS, Alex, and we should save SAS.
Do we want to? I mean, I know you
No,
want to,
no, no,
but
no,
do
no, no. Actually,
I?
we just want Finnair to reset up their hub in Stockholm
Oh,
that they had
listen,
during COVID.
Finnair have been through it. Finnair are returning aircraft because they washed their seats with the incorrect
I
substance or something.
know.
It's I mean, don't let anyone ever tell you aviation is not complex. Finnair is returning aircraft
What do you
because
mean by
of a
returning?
mistake. They're returning the A321s back to the leasing companies.
No, but they're getting them back. They're just being cleaned properly. They're like within a few weeks, they will have all their A321s again. Don't you
Back.
worry. I've been very
Yeah.
concerned about this.
You have. That's so interesting. Because this is such a specific story. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so sorry. They've returned them to
To
the
Finnair.
to yes. Sorry, sorry. My mistake. Yeah. So they're replacing 1,700 seat covers in eight A321 aircraft, six of which will be returned back to service, within a week. Finnair had previously suspended all operations of these aircraft on the 13th of October, so earlier in the month, because they were informed that the original seat covers, that the washing that they had, the impact of washing on the fire protection had not been verified, and therefore it was no longer certified, and blah blah blah. And it's just that little bit, those little nuggets of aviation that people don't realize. And the same was true for Global, who apparently, another week has gone by. Where is Global Airlines? Nowhere to be seen. I don't know if they're ever coming back, but they had an aircraft with seats that were also not certified. And when you so a lot of people remind me that certification is the single most significant headache for any airline, in so many different areas of trying to run an airline. But at the same time, it does play into the fact that is why air travel is so safe and why we have the safest form of transport. So yeah, Finnair having to deal with this complete chaotic national news story, all because the covers had not been washed in accordance with the guidance from the original seat manufacturer, and therefore it could have played a it could have worsened an unlikely and unfortunate event like a fire. And so they had to take these aircraft out of service, and they cancelled loads of flights. They've inconvenienced passengers. They're everything. There's a whole thing.
Yep, exactly. So let's round out by jumping into a little bit of Q&A, shall we?
Let's do it.
Right, let's stay on the topic of SAS. I just want to answer this question quickly from Robin, who, I'm so sorry, Robin, apparently you sent a question in March, which we haven't gotten to yet. But his question now is, with SAS being, or with EuroBonus, so SAS loyalty program, potentially being merged into Flying Blue if Air France-KLM get a bigger stake, do I think we should expect a devaluation of SAS EuroBonus points? And do we think that that's something to be concerned about? Long story short, no. I think the best thing that could happen to SAS EuroBonus is being brought into Flying Blue, because Flying Blue is so vastly superior
Oh,
to
he loves
SAS.
it.
It has access to so many more superior airlines. Definitely good news overall, although SAS redemptions might not be as good, but every other airline will be better. Let's see, who else do we have? I have a question here from Vishal. Oh, this is fun. Oh my gosh, actually, this is such an interesting question. Wow.
Oh, read it for God's
I
sake.
know, I'm just like, but have you seen the movie The Terminal with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, of course.
Good, good, good. So he asks,
Carcosa.
which airport would you choose if you had to spend a year inside it, like Tom Hanks in the movie The Terminal?
Right. Let's go through first the ones that we definitely would not, or is that list too long?
That list is
No,
literally
no, no.
eternal.
Let's go through the ones that we think we would not, but maybe people think we would want to. How about that? So, like, the ones that are at the top of that game, but we would not. Okay, I'll start. Not
Anything in the
Singapore.
US?
Not
Not
Singapore.
Singapore since
No
March.
way. Not since we realized everything earlier this year.
If you have to be airside, then
Yeah,
yeah,
no.
maybe not.
Yeah, and the terminal, he was airside, so no, it can't be Singapore because we'll just be me, you, and carpet. That's it.
But the thing is, we were in Terminal One, but let's
Yeah.
you okay, you're saying Singapore. I will definitely say
I'm
a
saying not
Seoul.
Singapore.
Yeah, not
Yeah.
Singapore. I'm saying not Seoul Incheon.
Oh,
I'll
yeah, no,
also
not so.
say not any airport in Europe. Oh,
Wow,
wait,
you've gone
no.
for the
With
continent.
one exception,
Go
which I
on,
might
go
actually
on,
choose. Well,
go on.
maybe back to, what I love, but Helsinki Airport is really freaking cozy, and they have a lot of nice cafes, and it feels just like home to me.
Yeah,
So
okay, we get it.
that's my European choice. What about you, if you had to choose one?
In Europe,
No. Okay. Well, yeah, one in Europe and then one in
okay,
general.
all right, one in Europe, Zurich,
Okay. You just eat chocolate for a year.
chocolate raclette. They've got bedrooms with great views of the in the lounge with great views of the runway. There's a terrace for the warmer days, fresh air. There is a nice piano bar. They've got Lindt chocolate stores and other chocolate stores everywhere. And you know I love chocolate, so yeah, I'd say in Europe, Zurich. Okay, what about rest of the world?
I mean, you said not Singapore, but the thing is, Terminal 3. And you could go between Terminal 4 as well by bus. But Terminal 3 specifically, like, there's so many things you could do. They have a movie theater. They have their butterfly garden. They have a pool. They have so many things airside that you couldn't really get at other airports, which still makes me lean toward that. The other option, for one reason and one reason alone.
You're going to, I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say? Doha?
Because of Evergreen.
Yes, exactly. Because of Evergreen Organics, the restaurant in the terminal. I think I could, you know, be nicely sustained there. And there is also a pool.
No, I would absolutely choose Doha because you would be able to have the best routine ever. An amazing gym, great bedrooms, an amazing gym, great food. Everything from high to low, fast food to plant-based to everything. So you could mix it all up. Also the greenery. So you could genuinely feel like you were outside, even though you were not, which is the reason why I had originally chosen Zurich for Europe. So surrounding yourself by the garden, great shopping. But then when you're bored of shopping, you could go and swim because there's an amazing pool. There's a golf simulator. There is enough. I wonder if we should do something where we spend like a week in transit in places.
Yeah. That would be such a cool series, actually.
Like we literally live in the airport for a week.
Oh my gosh. And we kind of have to do that.
Yeah. Because I think you could have an excellent routine and then we just reflect on, because the interesting thing is there would be aspects that we wouldn't know about now, but only when you do it would you then come to realize, this is a problem. Like, for example, I don't know, maybe we would realize that we could hear the announcements while we're trying to sleep, for example.
Yeah.
Or maybe there are lights that just don't turn off because of the fact that you're still within an airport. Or maybe the busyness or whatever. I think we should try it. I mean, the funny part is that obviously when I'm suggesting that, I'm thinking of somewhere like beautiful Hamad where we could have the best routine ever. But it would be funny if we tried to live in another airport as well. Yeah, bad airport. And then, you know, it's the first one. There had to be an incentive to stay because if there wasn't, I'd be out there, you know. So,
exactly.
Yeah, so something for us to consider.
Final question here from Rob. Says he loves the podcast. He wanted to share an experience on a BA flight back from Palermo. He was seated in 27A, one of the emergency exit rows, facing the cabin crew jump seat that is normally just occupied for takeoff and landing. Shortly after takeoff, the crew got up as usual, but this time, two plain-clothed non-rev passengers using staff travel benefits moved forward from their galley jump seats into the jump seats opposite him. The non-rever opposite me then decided to relax and sprawl out, taking over all the leg space between us.
What I would have hoped to
be an extra legroom seat to stretch out for an early evening flight ended up turning into roughly 3 hours of awkward footsies and me squeezing my legs and knees as close to my seat as possible to avoid touching legs.
No, that's inappropriate.
Horrible.
I would have had a quiet word with the CSD and said, look, I am a fare-paying passenger. And all airlines know this, right? The fare-paying passenger, even if you've paid the lowest economy fare ever, you still take priority over anyone traveling non-rev. So anyone traveling on staff travel or friends of family on staff travel, especially if they're on a jump seat. So I would have had a quiet word for you with the CSD and have said, look, I booked and paid for the extra legroom seat for it. And now there is this staff member or family friend of staff who's taking up all the legroom that I had booked, could maybe have a quiet word. Failing that, because obviously I don't think you have done that, and now obviously I'm assuming you're not still on board this flight. I would write into BA. BA are quite understanding of these kind of things, and I think you can get sent a decent amount of Avios for that.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. And if you can plane on board, you can get Avios instantly from the crew, which is pretty awesome as well.
If you have a British Airways Executive Club account, not if you have a partner airline account, even if they use the same currency, which is Avios.
Yeah, you know what's funny about this is when I had this experience a few weeks ago where I needed in-flight compensation from the crew, she literally handed me the phone. I went, "How many Avios do you want?" And
Oh my
I
God,
was
you
like,
slide all the way.
"Yeah." I was like, it wasn't even a slide. It was just a box where you input a number. And I was like, "Oh my God, what is appropriate here?" And I think it actually went too low. I did some research afterwards, but I was like, "Okay, that could have been a very fun moment if I had known what I was doing." All right. Well,
Cool.
thanks for a good talk today. We will catch you next week, next Wednesday, as always, on air wherever you catch your podcasts. So until then, see you later.
Bye-bye.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your cachava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of cachava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Your future self will thank you. Go to cachava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off your next order. That's cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS for 15% off.